fortune was made, but I've lost it twice.
Welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
And actually enjoy other people.
Yes, and are capable of human interaction without ulterior motivations.
Sometimes.
Most of the time. Sometimes.
Occasionally.
Almost never.
This entire podcast is going to be entirely in code, and you have to figure out what we really mean and what we don't.
Yeah, so get on that.
Yep.
I can't speak in code. God, Ben. I'm too dumb to do this podcast.
Well, you're just like one of the characters in the book we read this week. So this week we read Gone Girl by Gillian or Gillian, not sure which, Flynn.
I'm going with Gillian. It's less awkward.
Yeah, I feel like Gillian, but I've heard it pronounced Gillian, so who knows.
So Gillian, if you're out there and your name is Gillian, knock it off.
Yeah, what's wrong with you? What kind of Missourian are you? Jeez.
Yeah, you probably say Missouri, too.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, Lord.
Probably not. Yes, this week, Gone Girl, and we chose it, in case you didn't notice, last summer, I think. It hit the New York Times bestseller list and stayed there for a while, and apparently people were talking about it, like, left and right.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who've read it.
We decided to read Fifty Shades of Grey instead.
I'm not sure how I feel about that decision in hindsight. So we got one of our better episodes out of that.
I regret
so
nothing.
It was worth it for that.
Oh, I read plot synopses of books 2 and 3, by the way, if you ever want to.
Oh, goody.
Get filled in.
You know.
Yeah, so the book was on the bestseller list for a really long time, and our mom read it, and Ben's girlfriend read it, and other people we knew read it, and so we finally decided maybe we should read this book. And then just like another little fun fact, I guess, the author is a local author.
Authority on being
Gillian
an
is not a local
authority on being an author.
She's a Midwestern girl, which is, I think, why her small-town setting in Missouri it works so well.
Right.
She actually knows what that's... Well, maybe not necessarily has lived that, but knows it better than someone from New York.
Right.
Who's like, what's Missouri? I don't even...
Is that a state still? Technically.
And I actually found out that one of the attorneys at the office where I work, he is friends with her parents. Because apparently his wife was telling him to read this book that their friend's daughter wrote. And he's like, I don't read fiction, I only read nonfiction. And then he said, have you heard of Gone Girl? And I was like, dude. Yeah.
A little bit.
Everyone has.
Except for you.
Reading your Lincoln biographies.
Way to be last of the party.
Calmed out. So anyway. The book is, we think, best categorized as a crime mystery thriller. It does have, I guess, elements thrown in that aren't always necessarily in these types of books, but they're also all revealed as plot twists, which is definitely that style of book.
You could throw in psychological, too, because that's, I guess, suspense, maybe, not...
I don't feel like suspense works for this... I guess there are some suspenseful moments, but not really.
Not really. Nothing that lasts more than a chapter cliffhanger.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the main suspense would be, did he do it for the first part of the book?
Right.
But I would say I'm pretty comfortable fitting into the crime mystery thriller category.
Yeah, then
just a well-written one of those.
If someone insisted, that's what I would tell them.
I mean, granted, I don't really read crime mysteries, so...
Not too often.
If someone else who's more well-versed wants to yell at us, I guess feel free.
Well, you know, my feeling with genres is that it covers a wider range than genre implies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, a science fiction story can be about anything,
A romance story can actually take place anywhere with anyone.
That's true. Anytime, yeah. As long as you got some sexy times going on. It really doesn't matter.
Right. A mystery can be kind of the same thing. And I've read science fiction stories that are mystery stories.
Mm-hmm.
I've read science fiction stories that are kind of romance stories. I've read things that are all three of those, plus maybe a couple other things thrown in. I mean, it's just... it's easiest to call it a mystery crime type of story because it revolves around a...
crime.
Murder.
Well, not supposed murder. Crime.
Is faking your own death a crime? I believe
probably,
it is.
Probably, yeah.
It probably is. I'd imagine that the government
it's
doesn't like it.
It's a dick move.
When you take up law enforcement resources.
Yeah. which leads us to our plot synopsis.
Two psychopaths find true fake love.
or maybe alternately, one psychopath and one douche find true fake love, but...
Right, I was trying to streamline.
The two psychopaths works well enough for our purposes.
A psychopath and a douchebag find a way to coexist together up through the end of this book, kind of.
Hooray! Oh, I guess we probably should have given a spoiler alert before this. We haven't really spoiled too much yet.
I guess we imply a spoiler more than have stated one.
Yeah, just because the book did just come out last year, and there are a lot of twists, which we mentioned, because it is a crime story. If you don't want the mystery revealed for you, then don't listen to the podcast, because we're going to ruin all of the plot twists.
Yep, we're going to straight up ruin your shit.
Yeah, so... So, I suggest turning it off now.
Yeah, because if you don't...
Yeah.
You're going to find out that Amy, well, didn't really get murdered. And furthermore, she framed Nick and set the whole thing up.
Yeah, her entire diary entries in the first part of the book are all made up. Nick is actually entirely innocent of knowing that anything was going to happen. And then she actually does murder someone herself at the end of the book.
That is true.
So, not Nick, but she does murder someone. So, pretty crazy. So, for anyone who's still listening who hasn't read, a brief summary. Amy goes missing at the beginning of the book, and the first part is his narrative interspersed with her diary entries. And as it goes, he looks more and more guilty due to him being dumb and to Amy framing him. And it starts looking like he actually killed her and got rid of her. And at the same time is carrying on an affair with a younger woman, you know, just to make people automatically hate him because
right.
No one likes a cheater. Then the twist, Amy is alive, framed the entire thing, made up the diary. She's hiding out in these cabins in the Missouri countryside. But then gets robbed, so she goes to an ex-boyfriend to take her in. And the ex-boyfriend ends up being mostly as crazy as her, basically holding her hostage in his fancy summer retreat. Until she decides to go back to Nick and murders the ex-boyfriend. Comes home, comes up with the whole story about how he abducted her, so you murdered him to get free. And then she and Nick are... together forever. Kind of.
Yeah, assuming one of them doesn't beat the other one to death at some point in the next however many years.
I'm still not entirely sure. Apparently, they could be the perfect marriage made in hell, but I don't know. I feel like I just run away screaming from that. So the setting.
Two places, really. Manhattan, New York, sometimes. Mostly flashback moments. The majority of it takes place in Carthage, Missouri. Technically North Carthage.
Mm-hmm.
A fictional city on the Mississippi River. Economic times are kind of hard there, as it was, probably still is, in many places. And then I guess really... when we get to part two and we're following Amy around, it also covers a little more ground through central Missouri.
Yeah. Toward St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there's some brief scenes in St. Louis. It's mostly just... mostly Missouri.
Right.
A little bit New York. And the point of view tense, as I kind of mentioned in the summary, is changes between Nick and Amy. And for Amy, it's first her diary and then her actual narrative, where she reveals that their diary was all a huge construction.
Yes. And in an additional twist, real Amy is even less likable than diary Amy.
Oh, real Amy is freaking despicable from page one.
Amy is probably the only character in a book that we've read that I could call a crazy bitch without Gabs getting angry about. Because she's actually crazy, and she's actually a bitch.
She really is. Isn't the title of the manuscript Nick writes about her Psycho Bitch?
I think so.
And I mean, when we're calling this woman crazy, I just want to, like, I mean, as Ben said, she actually is crazy. We're not just saying, oh, she's crazy. Like, she is, like, diagnosably psychopathic.
Yeah.
Like, she belongs in a mental institution. She is insane.
Right.
In the most objective use of the term.
Right. She will cause harm to others by being a freely moving around person in society.
Yeah. She's super dangerous. So, I just want to point that out, that we're not throwing that term around lightly. Because I know some people don't like it. Don't like to hear crazy when they're just saying, that person was acting strange. They're crazy. No, she's literally crazy. Okay, so, with that out of the way, who is our protagonist?
Well, gosh, I can't choose who's more hateable, so I guess both of them.
Our co-tagonists.
Yep, once again, co-tagonists.
I feel like it's been happening to us a lot lately.
Yeah, that should at least change. I don't know. We'll see. That
make no promises.
I think that there's an excellent chance that's going to happen again in the next couple weeks.
So I guess now that we've, you know, as given you the assessment that Amy is actually psycho, maybe we should cover her a little bit and explain how.
Okay, sure, why not? So, when we say psychopath, that's our amateur diagnosis.
Yeah.
But we mean psychopath in the DSM-4, go look it up, sense. Where she doesn't really have conscience or morality, and has feelings, but where everything she does is definitely extraordinarily self-serving.
Yeah, I think that the definition of psychopath is they do have feelings, but they tend to be shallow.
Yes.
And their main function is just manipulating the hell out of other people.
Yes.
Because they don't have these morals that everyone else has to operate by because they can't really help themselves.
Yeah.
Our dumb emotions get in the way, I guess you could say. For a diagnosed psychopath, they don't have that problem. They might even have trouble understanding why what they're doing is wrong.
True, yeah, they might not consider it wrong. And I mean, that's why many famous killers are in that category.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not nearly every psychopath is a killer, but...
Right. You can actually function in society as a decent human being.
It turns out, I was listening to an expert on psychopathy on a podcast the other day. It was actually on Monster Talk.
Yeah, good episode.
Yeah, yeah. And he kept saying that they don't always physically injure or kill people, but they're always malevolent. The psychopaths are always malevolent. He kept using that word, and I went, that's a very strong word.
Yeah.
But, okay. But that's certainly Amy.
Yes.
Because anyone who has ever wronged her according to her own code of justice, she has hurt much worse than whatever the original injury was.
Yeah, she had a high school friend who did better on a test than her, And so Amy systematically cut her out of her life and then purposefully fell down a flight of stairs, breaking bones, claiming that this girl pushed her down the stairs.
Yeah. There's a brief relationship with a boyfriend in New York who she then framed up to look like a date rapist.
Yep.
And decided not to press charges.
Mm-hmm.
But basically teaching him a lesson, look what I could have done.
Right.
And then, obviously, spending an entire year preparing an elaborate frame-up of Nick.
Yeah.
For the crime of cheating on her.
Yeah.
And people do have very strong reactions to that, usually, but...
Yeah, I feel like my reaction to discovering my husband cheating on me would be to confront him and then be like, you're a dickhole, I'm leaving.
Right.
Not like, I'm going to pretend I don't know and elaborately frame my own murder so you go to prison forever. Like, that seems awfully...
Yeah.
Awfully strong.
And she actually seemed even nuttier to me when she... When it's first revealed that she's been... that she's framed this whole thing up, because she was, in her original version of the plan, she was even going to go down to the Gulf and die.
That's true. She was going to kill herself. And she thought it would be a perk if someone found her and then said, oh, look, here's her dead body, Nick
right.
killed her. But they didn't necessarily have to find her.
Yeah.
She was just going to kill herself.
But then she then decided, eventually, that why should she die? Like, that doesn't make sense. That's not punishing
why,
Nick. Yeah,
why do I have to get punished for what Nick did?
I have to figure out how to pop up with a new identity at some point.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, and then at the end of the book, she murders her ex-boyfriend and makes it look like he had kidnapped her and, like, basically kept her in, like, a rape dungeon. It's revealed that she used wine bottles to bruise herself.
I know.
So it would mimic sexual abuse. I mean, this woman is freakishly detailed.
Yeah, yeah, that's one of her big personality traits, too. And including the creation of her diary,
mm-hmm.
which she very carefully went back and aligned events in that with things that had happened to her in her own calendar notes that she still had and with current events of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, just... going next level on setting this up. And I guess that level of detail is part of why we're supposed to be able to swallow that she was able to frame him up so perfectly to begin with. Hi. I'd like to talk just a little bit about Diary Amy.
Okay.
Which is what she keeps referring to her diary self as.
Yes. The less despicable version of
yes,
Amy.
Yes. The still unlikable, but not... remotely despicable, more just like the kind of passive aggressive harboring grudges for things but never communicating them, just like the shitty mate type of person.
As I was to say, she's less like hateable and more just oh, this woman needs to learn how to speak her feelings out loud.
Yeah, and that was my main problem with Diary Amy, was that she kept relaying these things of, oh, I try not to be the wife who does this, and oh, I'm awesome because I'm the wife who doesn't do this thing that lots of wives do. And then she's still pretty clearly upset about it. And I'm going,
she's...
just tell the dumb lout that he's not paying enough attention to you. He'll probably even feel bad. He has no idea.
Yeah.
He is a dumb idiot.
He is a dumb idiot.
Both of them are terrible at their relationship.
Yeah. and I mean, I thought she did get more sympathetic toward the end of the diary just by virtue of getting pregnant and turning Nick abusive.
Right.
You start going, okay, like, you probably should speak your feelings better, but if your husband's, like, you know, knocking you over...
Right. Once he knocks you down, then my sympathy is with you, even though... I have not found you even remotely likable up to that point. Like, there's a difference between I don't want to know you and I want you to get beaten.
Yeah. I liked her better than Ben did. I think probably a lot of people who read the book like her better than Ben did. I do want to say that I think Diary Amy can be pretty sympathetic, even though she is bad at expressing herself.
Mm-hmm. But then, in contrast, you have Nick, who is emotionally unavailable. And one of those guys who tries really hard to be stoic.
Yeah, and likable.
Yes. He's so stoic with the bad emotions and likable with the good ones, basically. Right,
because, well, his father was an asshole, and so he wants everyone to like him so that they realize that he's not like his dad.
Right.
But he's not, not necessarily being himself when he does that, and right. He's not really always sure of the best time to do that.
Right, yeah.
You know, case number one, after Amy goes missing, they do a press conference asking, you know, anyone has any information or please bring her back or whatever. And he finds himself smiling at the camera so that people, like, you know, like, that's his charming, nice guy smile. But when you're smiling on camera, when your wife's just gone missing, people think you're, you know, you were the one who made her go missing.
Looks like what's that expression? God damn it. The cat who's
the Cheshire cat.
Not the Cheshire cat. There's something about a cat and
the cat who caught the canary?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking
at. Ew.
There you go.
I know my cat phrases.
Yeah, you do. I don't know what that's doing. But yeah, he's, and then in part two of the book, when Amy's revealed what's going on and he's finally figured out that, when he finds the last clue that she left him, we'll talk about that in a bit, but he knows that he's being framed now and he doesn't know how to get out of it, and he still continues to do dumb stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he keeps letting his temper get the best of him.
Mm-hmm.
He keeps talking to people he shouldn't be talking to. It's expressly against the advice of his extremely expensive lawyer.
Yeah, he's making day trips out places without telling people.
Yeah.
He goes up to Hannibal at one point to explore a clue without telling the police, and they find Amy's purse out there, and they think, oh, he must have driven out there to ditch the purse. But if he would have fucking called up the policeman and say, hey, I think I figured out clue two, come with me, and the cop was with him the entire time, then obviously they would know he couldn't have done that.
Right. And mismanaging his relationships with other people.
Yeah.
I mean, he does a really terrible job of, I mean, handling is what he's trying to do, and it doesn't work. He does a terrible job of handling his mistress.
Mm-hmm.
He... Yeah. It was just so obvious that that's what he was doing. Like, a complete idiot would have been pissed off if you were trying to break up with him that way.
Yeah.
Like, Nick! And he completely mishandles Amy's parents, who want to be on his side.
Yep.
And
yeah, he manages to almost even get his sister against him.
Yeah. Very, very nearly. And, I mean, they're close.
Well, they're OMG happen. Twins.
Yeah, they're OMG twins. And they've always been buddies, as happens pretty frequently in such cases.
Mm-hmm. As siblings are capable of.
As siblings are occasionally capable of.
We don't really know anything about
that.
Yeah,
I wouldn't. I've never met any siblings who get along. Yeah. But,
Me neither.
Yeah, it's weird. It's really weird. I guess maybe talk about Margot a little bit. Do you more you wanted to say about Nick?
No, just that he, I guess Amy knows him well enough that she knows he's going to blunder his way through this.
Yeah.
But if he had like a modicum of like reason or just like stopped for a minute, I feel like parts of her plot would have fallen apart.
Right. Like a more rational person never would have fallen into all these traps.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's part of what's, so the part of what's interesting about her frame up, I guess, is that there is, and part of the reason I think she's a psychopath for that matter, is that she manipulates his emotions and his behavior so well,
mm-hmm.
even from far away.
Mm-hmm.
And he walks right into everything exactly like she thought he would.
Yep.
Nick's twin sister, Margot, who goes by Go, is probably, if not the only likable character, probably the most likable character. In my opinion. But she's the foul-mouthed sister character. Again, just, I don't know where that comes from. It's not true to life.
No one has foul-mouthed sisters. And
we'll tell him openly when he's being an idiot. Again, I don't know where that comes from. And she's the only character, aside from Nick and Amy, who gets really fleshed out. Mm-hmm. Other characters, even the ones who show up multiple times, are just kind of there to forward what's happening, I think.
Yeah, you know, she was in New York and also had to return home because she had the bad luck to basically get involved with various job opportunities that then went bankrupt.
Yeah, it sounds like she made her fortune twice.
Uh-huh.
And then lost it twice.
Yeah.
And now she's back in Carthage. It's like, fuck this.
Yeah.
I'm going to own a bar and just be okay.
Yeah.
She's the voice of reason, not that Nick ever listens. And they have occasional moments where they're a little bit playful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I appreciate that. The book needed a touch of levity every once in a while. I don't know, she's a pretty good character. I wish I could have read more about a character like her instead of like Nick.
She's like a grounded character.
Mm-hmm.
And she loves her brother.
Yeah.
Even though he is sometimes a dumb idiot.
Yeah. Yep. In spite of it, she still does. Which Nick, by the end of this story, Nick needs one person who feels that way.
Yeah.
Because I think there's probably only one.
Yeah.
For the rest of his probably short life.
Oh, poor Nick.
Yeah, maybe he's almost sympathetic with you. Except I still think he was being dumb more than a dupe.
Oh, I agree.
We
also have, speaking of characters who are not necessarily likable, but just not really hated, Nick's mistress, Andy, a 23-year-old college student, basically fallen for the professorial type.
Yep.
Because, you know, she grew up in the Midwest and just doesn't really know what's up.
Sure.
Well,
plus undergraduates have a tendency to have little crushes on professorial types.
I had a total crush on a couple of my professors when I was an undergrad. I never harbored the thought that anything would ever happen.
Right.
I never would have taken that extra step that she does, but I can definitely see where she's coming from.
Right.
Like, cute, smart guy, but right, he's, like, older than me and has a family. Damn it!
We didn't get to know her very well. It sounds like from his backstory with her that she might have even been one of the brighter kids in the class. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, the smart young girl who's surrounded by hormone-addled morons of her own age.
Yeah.
Tends to like the older guys.
Yeah.
She definitely feels more like a victim than anyone else, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you can say bad on her because she did know that he was married, but he did feed her the whole my wife is distant, my marriage is falling apart crap that a lot of those girls that get fed and then believe despite themselves. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm not gonna hate on her too much. You should not sleep with a guy who is married.
Yeah, but I've always put that on the cheater.
Yeah.
Rather than on the person he's having the affair with.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get on your moral high horse or whatever if you're that type of person, but just, like, ultimately the person who broke up the marriage is the person in it.
Right.
In my opinion. I actually kind of like Nick a little better when I found out about the affair, too. not because I'm pro-affair, but...
I know when Ben said that, yeah. I was like, what?
But because it was... I was like, oh, he can have feelings.
Right. And then the other side of that is you figure out, oh, well, he's basically with Andy to stroke his own ego.
Yeah,
and... He doesn't really love her.
Andy's trying to get Amy to end the marriage. He's being a
total coward
about it.
Yeah.
Again, both of them are bad at relationships.
Real bad.
And so as soon as Nick's in trouble, he jettisons Andy.
Yep.
Doing a poor job of it, as already mentioned. And predictably, she gets pissed. She actually manages to bite him in the face, which I thought was pretty good. Yeah. A pretty good move.
Yeah, she's all right.
She ends up okay.
We have Desi, who is... Amy's ex-boyfriend who's obsessed with her.
Yep. The rich power game creeper, kind of.
Yeah, he's a pretty big creeper.
Oh, look. I built you a greenhouse full of tulips because that's your favorite flower when you were in high school.
I painted this room lavender because it was your favorite color.
And she's like, oh boy. What have I stepped into? I said if it was the movie, that's where the creepy music would have started playing.
Well, and he also does, I mean, and Amy's not a great person, so I guess you don't feel like too bad for her. But I mean, he is definitely a controlling, he would be a horror of a boyfriend.
Oh, yeah.
He picks out clothes for her. He only lets her eat, like, specific proportions of food so she'll lose weight and be way fish, and she has to color her hair, and, like, I mean, he's pretty creepy.
Yeah, he's pretty bad. He's one of those boyfriends who could sneak in under the radar on the controlling thing, though. Because at first, you'd be like, oh, he's pampering me. He's buying me all stuff.
He remembers everything I like.
And it takes a while before you realize, oh, he's only letting me have the stuff that he's getting me.
Yeah. That's no good.
Well, Amy said he likes to collect things.
Uh-huh.
Cars, clothes, houses, and now he's collecting her.
Yeah.
Which was a... creepy way to put it.
Yeah.
A turn of phrase I actually like.
Fairly accurate.
Yeah.
I still don't necessarily think he deserved to get murdered.
Well, no, that's a different story entirely. I think he just kind of deserved to be a lonely middle-aged man living with his mother. He had millions and millions of dollars. I mean, his life could have been worse.
Yeah.
Not that money's everything, but it doesn't hurt.
Definitely should not be dating anyone, though.
No.
Yeah.
He should be using his insane wealth to just pick up a high-class call girl every now and again.
Every once in a while.
Let a professional take the edge off of his sexual urges.
And then let her go. Don't keep her
well,
in your house.
Well, obviously don't keep her locked in your lake house.
Because then, yeah, I probably should go to prison.
Yes.
We have Amy's parents, Rain and Mary Beth.
Yes, who I consider a single unit because they're basically the perpetually...
perfect couple!
Yes, vomit.
Yeah, the people you see and just want to be like, ugh, what are you doing?
Right, when you see 55-year-old couple cuddling. Because there's that window, because if they were 70, you'd be like, oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, they still love each other.
And if they were 25, you'd be like, damn kids, but when you're like 55, you're like, god damn it.
You should know better. What's wrong with you?
Act like adults.
Well, they're totally like the, here's our perfect family, because, mm-hmm. you know, they got wealthy writing a series of books.
Amazing Amy.
Yeah, all about this girl named Amy who's always perfect, and, you know, based off of their Amy, but... actually kind of a pressure move of, like, you better be perfect.
Good job, child psychologists.
Yeah.
So, Amy actually harbors some resentment, and I think fairly up to a point, against her parents for maneuvers like that. That was another one of the... She took it too far. She basically didn't seem to give a shit about them at all.
Yeah.
But that's her attitude towards anyone who she perceives as having wronged her.
Yeah.
Kind of surprised she's never done anything to engineer their downfall.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're giving her all their money. Although, they did make her broke, too.
Yeah.
By borrowing tons of money from her.
Right.
So, I am kind of surprised she didn't do anything.
Yeah, it's, right?
Come to think of it.
Like, we need this much. Okay, here you go. Okay, now we don't have any money. Yeah, kind of not cool to pressure your child by your very livelihood.
Yeah.
It's very subtle. Like, it's kind of, I don't know, it's almost like borderline abusive, but not in a way that you could ever prove to, like, a court or a social worker.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe partially the way, well, she is why she is.
Sort of some of that manipulative thing comes from. I mean, no one really knows what makes a psychopath.
Yeah.
It could be random, there could be other factors. I suspect we'll never actually know the answer to that question, because I don't think there's any way to test it. At least not ethically.
Yeah. But they wouldn't care, those psychopaths.
Yeah, well.
Do whatever you gotta do, man.
The ethics board cares.
Yeah. Well, and you really just shouldn't do that to people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's raise 100 kids, 50 of them. We're going to see if we can manipulate into becoming psychopaths. The thing is, they'll never suffer from it.
Yeah, because they'll.
They won't mind at all, but we don't know what we'll be unleashing on the rest of society.
Also, yeah, exactly. What will they do to us when they grow up?
It's still unethical, all right? I don't think anyone would choose to be that way. There are the cops, Boney and Gilpin.
Mm-hmm.
And Boney may have even had a longer name, but she goes by Boney.
I think so, yeah.
And she's basically the lead investigator. Gilpin's her partner.
Yep.
And they're cops. And Boney's the good instincts type of cop.
Yeah, she,
She's like, you don't seem like a killer, but all the evidence makes you look like one.
Right. She kind of is on Nick's side, but then everything just keeps piling up against him. Mm-hmm. But once Amy comes back, he is able to convince her that.
Yeah. And by the same token, at the end, she's like, there's something wrong with Amy, and we can catch her one of these days, but I don't have any evidence to prove it. Like, again,
she can't find anything to really pin her.
And Nick's her only way to catch her, and of course, he eventually gives up on that.
Yeah. Like a big old chode.
Yep.
And then I guess Tanner Bolt's the last one. Mostly he's just a big name lawyer who defends guys who are probably guilty.
Yeah, it sounds like almost all of his clients are probably guilty.
Yeah.
But he's the show trial type of lawyer who's good at manipulating juries, apparently.
Yeah, he's like that caricature of like the southern lawyer who goes into court with his suspenders, and he's like...
He definitely would have been on O.J. Simpson's legal team. Let's put it that way. And if any of our listeners don't know that reference, then ye gods.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
Go away.
Oh, boy.
You are scary.
Almost mid-90s, though.
Well.
It's going to be a while ago.
I was young, but I still know about it.
I would assume people know about it. It's something, it's one of those cultural references that won't die. It's like the joke that, well, basically every comedian has about morning DJs and how they won't stop telling fucking Lewinsky jokes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, you can do that, and if you're in a certain age range, you can do those and OJ jokes until you die, apparently.
We know what Bill Clinton was doing in the Oval Office. Oh my god.
Wow, that is a fresh take.
That was a while ago.
I hope Bill Clinton breaks through the glass of your radio studio and stabs you in the eye with his penis.
And then the other DJ would joke about that for the next 10 years.
Well, good. That'd be funny.
Remember the time the madman got murdered by Bill Clinton's penis?
It'd be better if he just went to like a PTSD thing and was like all upset and having flashbacks and crying about it. That'd be funnier to me. I just want to see that radio DJ suffer, damn it.
Okay, Ben. You're scaring me a little.
Sorry, I've been inside the head of a psychopath too much. I just want them to have justice my way.
Yeah. Well, I think the
fortunately
getting murdered on Bill Clinton's boner.
I probably can't manipulate Bill Clinton into doing that.
Probably.
I mean, his charisma's pretty high. I don't know if I can roll past that. As high as my own stat is.
Well, plus he's being guarded by Hillary, so...
That's
that
true.
The double power couple thing going on there.
It'd be tough. It'd take me at least a year to do that. I don't think I have the patience.
First, you have to befriend the Clintons. But their daughter's already married, so... Your most obvious channel is out.
I guess I was just to get rich and become a donor.
There you go.
Yeah.
So... let's talk about some moral issues.
All right. Well, Gabs wants to know if this book is bad for feminism.
Yeah. it stars, I guess, a female character, but she is basically a misogynist's dream of, like, what an evil woman is, you know? Like, manipulating everyone around her, framing her poor innocent husband, like, just being totally unsympathetic and a psycho. Mm-hmm. And I told Ben, I think if the book had been written by a guy, I would be way more uncomfortable with the way Amy is written, because I'd be like, this guy has some issues with women. But because it was written by a woman, that makes it a little more, maybe the author's just playing with this idea of the psycho woman.
Yeah, and I actually even wonder if the author is trying a little bit to make a point in that, along those lines. Amy kind of mentions that, you know, oh, here's a persona you put on because it works on men, and here's the thing that women do that I think is that coldly rational me thinks it's kind of shitty, and like, it's almost like you could almost read it as an indictment of that if you wanted to. I'm not really trying to make that argument. I'm just trying to toss a couple ideas out there that kind of fit with it. Like, I mean, if you want to get if you want to read really deeply into it, okay, so I guess this is a little ahead of time, but when we were trying to come up with a theme earlier, I said, you know, like, if you wanted to go out of your way to try to make a case for this book just being an argument against marriage, I think you could do that. I think you'd be wrong. In fact, I think you'd be wrong enough that I wouldn't really respect your opinion. But I think you could pull enough evidence out of the pages from things that people say and the way the relationships work, and that ending especially, I think you could make the argument and not look like a fool in an academic setting if you were just trying to throw a bomb around.
Yeah.
And I think you could do that with a couple of issues, including you know, what is a modern woman and how is she supposed to act versus, like, the stereotypical Midwestern housewife, because that comes up a few times, too.
Yeah, I also think there's, like, you know, a ton of women read this book, and there's kind of this theory that maybe Amy is, like, the unbridled, insane version that, like, you could become if you snapped one day. You know, like, all marriages have problems.
Right.
And maybe if we were, like, willing to let ourselves just become completely off the wall, like, our marriages could all turn into this. Take a slight and then just slap them back with something 10 times as bad. Because I think in relationships, even if you're in a good one, occasionally the person you're with will do something, and your immediate reaction is, like, irrational hatred. You're like, oh my god, you did that, and now I hate you so much! And then, like, maybe after 5 seconds, you're like, okay, I'm better now. You didn't mean that. But, you know, like, you have those moments, and maybe Amy is just that moment extended into, like...
So, that thing where a couple's having an argument and someone brings up some slight from, like, 2 years ago, and the other partner is going, really? This? Right now?
Yeah.
And then when things have cooled off, the person who brought it up is going, I don't know why I brought that. Like, that's really... I'm not even mad about that. Yeah. I don't know what the hell that was. It's like that moment extended to its illogical extreme.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a thought experiment.
Interesting.
I don't necessarily think that's what it is.
Right, again.
I think this book is more of a straightforward thriller, but...
Right. It is kind of... I mean, we're kind of, right now, trying to pull issues out of a thriller, and it's not that they're not present. Some thrillers are expressly designed around an issue. Uh-huh. I mean, you've read a couple... You read about one about school shootings,
yeah.
basically,
yep.
or several years ago, I read one about... Actually, that one might have started with a school shooting, too. I can't remember. But it was about gun control,
mm-hmm.
basically. And sometimes an author is trying to drive a point like that home, even with a thriller. But it's we're kind of engaging our own little thought experiment right now and taking something that's not really intended to be read deeply and trying to just pull stuff out of it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun.
Yeah. I mean, not all the characters, but Nick and Amy themselves, I think, are just so out there that it's hard to say, this is a commentary on all relationships, because I pray to God that you are not in one of those relationships.
Well, yeah, I mean, if this was supposed to be a commentary on all relationships, that would say a lot more about the author than it would
yeah.
about relationships.
You'd be like, ooh, that's, And I mean, I think... all couples probably manipulate each other a little bit, but not to this extent.
Sure, and I'll agree with that as well. Because some of the little things, a lot of the stuff that gets mentioned, and part of what really bothered me about Diary Amy, I think, was that she was kept making a point of, oh, I'm trying to be this perfect wife. And I was like, well, don't try to be a perfect wife. Try to just, like,
be happy.
Like, be you. Yeah, exactly. And, let's see. I'm trying to think of an example without making it terribly personal, but kind of the thing where, oh, okay, here's a low-level manipulation that I think people take for granted that I think you'd have to be kind of crazy yourself to think this was a horrible, evil thing. When you say, hey, you... want to do this thing on Saturday that, you know, your partner doesn't really want to do. And you're like, and it's something that you like or something you're curious about, and you kind of convince them to do it because, oh, come on, I really want to do it. Like,
mm-hmm.
I think it would be cool. And they go, okay, well, I'll do it because you think it'll be cool. And then later when it sucks, they get to lord that over you for the next 5 years. Like, those are, like, both halves of that statement are... kind of like low-level manipulations.
Yeah.
But in the majority of cases, it never turns poisonous.
Yeah.
Is the thing.
Yeah. It never turns into people framing their own murder.
It very rarely turns into someone framing their spouse for murder.
Rarely.
Very rarely.
You, for sexual issues, just wanted to mention... once we find out what Amy is really like, is Nick's sexual play for this younger girl really as despicable?
I mean, it's not good.
It's never good.
You shouldn't be, when you're in a committed monogamous relationship, it is generally considered rude to then go have sex with other people without asking.
Yeah. Also, like, with the express purpose of making them mad at you and breaking up with
Yeah, them. It's, you know, to me it's less the cheating in this specific case and more they just being such a fucking coward.
Yeah.
Man up, Nick.
Come on, Nick.
If you want out, tell her you want out. And if you're afraid she'll do something crazy, well, then that's all the more reason to get out of
yeah.
there. Tell her, and if she argues, then just next time she goes somewhere, just disappear.
Yeah.
Call her and tell her you're okay. Don't call the cops, but I'm gone and I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
And we talked about Desi, and I mean, he's an extreme version of kind of some of manipulative relationship behavior, too.
Yeah.
And there are people who are lower level versions of Desi. I think I've maybe even met a couple. I've seen people who, with their partner, always have to be the one to buy and always have to be the one to make the decisions and that kind of stuff.
The thing that I hate, which is like when you go to a restaurant and, oh, the lady will have the... I'm like, let her order for herself.
I know.
That's like a really low level of what Desi is doing, but it still pisses me off. Like, let her order her own fucking food.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's... I guess if you know what she wants because you know her well enough and, like, you're waiting for her to get there, you order her favorite cocktail or something. Like, that's romantic when she's sitting right across the table... With her big face and your big dumb fucking face.
She'll love that.
She'll, you know what? She can order because she's not a child. Oh, okay. Well, I'm skipping around again. I forgot to put this in the points of interest. And this is maybe a slight bleed over from 50 Shades of Grey to some degree, too.
Okay.
But when we write stories... A message, a request from me to everyone in the world, especially authors and people who write in a non-professional setting, if I'm going to read it, but can we stop having couples call each other baby? That shit drives me crazy. I think it's so stupid.
That is my number one pet peeve about How I Met Your Mother, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Is that Marshall and Louis are constantly calling each other baby. She's like, but baby! I'm like... Ugh.
Stop doing that.
Who does that?
That's
mean,
weird.
I have heard couples call each other baby and stuff, and I'm probably even guilty of it occasionally, but I mean, it's like constant.
Right.
Okay, come up with another name, please.
Or for that, and I don't know, maybe this is me and not the rest of y'all, but like kind of the use of, man, why can't I come up with words today? When someone says baby or something, what's the cutesy names, whatever.
Term of endearment.
I feel like there's a single word that covers that. But anywho, just kind of like the constant use of those in a lot of fictional relationships. I don't really see that among people I know.
Mm-hmm.
Like... Even if it's not baby, if they just say sweetheart or darling or honey every single time, it's like the couples don't talk that way. If anything, they're more likely to be, hey, shithead, give me some cereal.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, butt poop, are you done with my breakfast yet?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, honey, pass the milk. Give me the milk, you dick. And then you both laugh because it's so outrageous.
Totally. That's awesome. I agree. And I guess, well, we kind of skipped to points of interest, but I'm going to backtrack to themes a little bit because
sure.
Ben and I were saying we have a hard time finding a theme. We were wondering if it was a commentary, but I think more of a theme you could pull from the book is, are we ever really who we say we are, and do you really know people? Because everyone on the book, is putting on a face. Now, most people aren't as extreme as Amy is, but I would say pretty much everyone does put on an act occasionally.
Right.
I have gabs, and then I have work gabs.
Right.
And work gabs is very polite and quiet and does what people ask and doesn't, you know, yell fuck you at my coworkers. like I might to my brothers. And so I would say I'm probably putting on a different personality for work.
Mm-hmm.
It's still me, but it's not, you know, I guess unfiltered me.
Right. You put your filter on to go to work. Especially if you're in an office environment or if you teach like mm-hmm. I do. Obviously, when I'm in a room with a 10-year-old, I don't talk to a 10-year-old the same way I talk to my sister.
I hope not.
And I don't talk to their parents the same way I talk to, you know, my parents.
Uh-huh. And a lot of people, you know, struggle with that in relationships, too.
Mm-hmm,
like,
definitely.
You want to be in a relationship with someone who lets you be you. even if you're, like, ugly and stupid and crying, like I do sometimes, you want the other person to be able to see that and still care about you. But a lot of times early on in relationships, and even sometimes late on in relationships, depending on what kind of one you're in, you're trying to put on your best face.
Right.
You're trying to get hot. You're trying to, you do whatever, you know, so the other person will like you.
And one of the kind of like hallmarks of a boyfriend or girlfriend that a friend of yours has that you don't like is that your friend doesn't act like they normally do around them. You know, like, it's one thing if they're just trying a little harder to make themselves look better, you know, thought, word, and deed, all that stuff. It's like, okay, he's just trying right now. Eventually, they'll either break up or it'll wear off.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, when you have the friend who's like, oh, hey, okay, that's cool. All right, we're hanging out. Yeah, awesome. And, like, just hanging, and then all of a sudden their girlfriend's up and they're like, hey, honey! And yeah, they're just like a completely different person.
The,
like,
boyfriend or girlfriend voice.
Yeah, so obnoxious. So obnoxious. That's something I definitely associate with younger people who are still figuring out how to be in a relationship and still be themselves, not yet. Because, like, a first date behavior really shouldn't be significantly different from first behavior, but I think it is for most of us.
Try to be charming and funny.
Yeah.
And attractive. And
I know, and I'm all those things all the time, so why do I try so hard?
Like, you're not going to tell someone on a first date that, like, you accidentally shit your pants on vacation. But, like, you can tell your boyfriend of 2 years that, and he'll just crack up.
Say, depending on context, I might, but
depending on the girl or the guy.
Yeah, exactly. But, no, you talk about farting a lot more with someone you've been dating for a year than someone you've been dating for a week.
Yeah. I mean, you fart on someone that you've been dating for a
year. That's true. You don't talk about farting. You just fart on them. So. Oh, boy. So, some points of interest.
Yeah, any other points of interest? I liked Amy's anniversary treasure hunts, just because it reminded me of, if I tried to set up, you know, little clues, like, this is what happened to us the past year, I feel like Scott would be like, I don't know. And then I'd get pissed. Like, that actually felt like a really real relationship moment to me.
Yeah.
I did think Amy's clues were too hard.
Yeah.
Like, I would never do something that hard. I would be like,
the clue was a little too hard, and her grudge being held was a little too hard.
Yeah.
But, like, that, instead of being, here's a little relationship thing amplified times a million, that one was like, here's a normal relationship thing, like, plus 5%.
Yeah.
That one was really close. I loved Nick and Margo's mundane story contest. Mm-hmm. Something about that is very charming to me. Just the idea of intentionally telling as long and boring a story as you possibly can.
That's pretty funny.
Until the other person cracks. That was clever.
And then, I don't know if really know this is a point, I guess it is a point of interest, and Ben and I mentioned it a little earlier on, but isn't there some hole in Amy's story? I mean, I couldn't really find a good one to get a hold on, but I thought a trained police detective could surely find a flaw in Amy's plan that she didn't think of.
Yeah, and maybe that's why Boney's instincts were going crazy, too. She's like, okay, something here isn't right,
mm-hmm.
and we don't have hard evidence for it, but, like, the way people are acting isn't quite right, and the way they're explaining their stories isn't quite right, but nothing that we can get physical evidence to back up the inconsistencies with. I think that's probably somewhat that is. Like, maybe any good cop would have caught that, and you don't have to have crazy supernatural instincts to do it.
Yeah.
And something I mentioned, this was in a throwaway comment in the Twitter feed while I was reading this book, but Nick's full name is Lance Nicholas Dunn. He's like, he's getting thrown around like it always does for killers. And I was like, okay, if there was actually a case of a murderer, even if they were an infamous serial killer who'd finally been caught, there is no way in hell anyone would throw around Lance Nicholas Dunn to identify them.
Lance.
You could assassinate a president, Lance. No one would call you Lance.
Sorry, Lance Bass.
That was driving me. Well, he was fixated on it. Like, he did the three name thing like 100 times in the first part of the book, and every time it sounded stupider to me.
Ben, I think you were just biased against the name Lance.
I think I don't have a problem with the name Lance. I'm just saying Lance is not the name of a serial killer.
Lance Nicholas.
And I don't think the media would latch onto that either.
Yeah.
It's just, it doesn't snap off the tongue. It's like, Lance Nicholas Dunn, murderer. They'd be like, Nick Dunn, murderer.
Yeah. Totally. I also just want to mention that, how does anyone know how long frozen sperm lasts? Because I feel like Amy could not have gotten pregnant off of Nick's frozen sperm.
That was the one hole, yeah.
I mean, it's creepy, like, on so many levels that you just take someone's sperm and get pregnant without them knowing. But, especially when he thought that the clinic threw it away, and then she... It's weird, but I'm surprised she managed to do that. And plus, she's, like, 40... And some women are really fertile and get pregnant no problem at 40, I guess. But it just seemed like, is the sperm still good? You're a little older. Like, how did you pull that off? And you have no money. Like, how did you pull that off?
Dramatic necessity?
Yeah. And why did Nick stay with you?
Right. Because Nick has such a... so messed up in his head that him fathering a child under any circumstances will apparently lead him to be completely loyal to that situation, no matter what it is.
He has to prove he's not his own dad by being a good dad. And so then he's going to stay with this woman who he is literally afraid is going to murder him in the middle of the night.
Yep.
Because she impregnated herself with his sperm.
Yep, so they're going to pretend to be in love so he can raise his perfect child perfectly, I guess.
I don't know.
I'm a little tired of the... It may just me as a cranky, childless person, but I'm getting a little tired of the children as a trump card in storytelling.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I get how important kids are to their people. Well, I don't, actually. But
right, because you don't have any.
intellectually, I get that is the kind of important thing that... like, changes people, and that I probably can't grasp without having a kid, but that doesn't mean I'm willing to be manipulated by that.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, a baby is a baby. It's kind of a not interesting thing if it's not yours.
I think literature does rely on pregnancy a lot.
TV really does. Literature isn't as bad about it.
That is correct. Yes. TV is obsessed with getting people pregnant. Yes. It happens in, like, pretty much any show you will ever watch. Is someone's gonna get accidentally pregnant.
Yeah, eventually,
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, season 3. Time for the someone gets pregnant storyline.
Yeah. You know this character is super smart and would only have safe sex and would never get accidentally pregnant? Well, she just got accidentally pregnant. I'm like, really? Fucking really? And she's gonna keep the baby because you're not allowed to get abortions on TV.
Yeah, now that would, man, in a sitcom, how ballsy would that writing decision be? Probably someone's tried it and couldn't get it okay. Yeah. That'd be my guess.
Yeah. I had that conversation. There was a fake pregnancy scare storyline on a show that I watched, and I said, I hope she's really pregnant and then goes and gets an abortion because she's in college and it'll interfere with her, like, career.
Right?
That would be crazy! Just because you'd never see that.
And it happens! That's the other thing, too. Like, people get accidentally pregnant. Even smart people, who in theory would only have safe sex, sometimes get pregnant.
It's one of my greatest fears.
Right, to do that when the timing isn't right, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of them don't keep that baby. Like, can we put that on TV? Can we acknowledge it's part of society? More than half of us think we should have the right to do that.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I feel another one star in our future.
Yeah, right. My bad.
So anything else to say before we kind of go on to wrap up?
Not really. Let's wrap it up.
Okay. So, strengths and weaknesses of the writing. I felt the story was compelling and well-written, actually.
So I had no problem with the writing. I thought it was well written. I thought it was good commercial writing, maybe better than that even. I thought the psychology of the two characters was captured pretty well. I thought that, I mean, there were no gaping holes in what's really a pretty elaborate story that could probably only happen in a book or a movie or something. Yeah. But it was, it read as believable, and it wasn't hard to read, except that I just didn't like this story very much. I didn't like the characters. I was able to read it in large chunks when I read it, but I had a lot of trouble picking it back up every time I put it down.
Yeah, and I think that's funny, because when I was reading the book, I did what a lot of people did, where I was reading it, and then every time I had to put it down, I was like, no, it's like we're reading it at work, you know, during lunch break or whatever, and have to go back and just be sitting there like, damn it, 5 o'clock, happened already.
Whereas I would finish a chapter, put it down, and like avoid it for an entire day. It's like, I don't want to have to spend more time with these disgusting people.
And I think those are maybe the two sides of the coin. I mean, I didn't completely love everything about the book. Sure. I thought it was very interesting and compelling, though. But I've talked to people who aren't a huge fan of it, and they didn't really like that all the characters were unlikable. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there are more people like you out there.
I'm sure there are plenty of people like me out there. I mean, I didn't, on the flip side, I certainly didn't hate everything about it. I wasn't just hate reading it. I kind of was for about 40 pages
in the beginning.
In the front half. Yeah, I actually thought part one was just 180 pages of who gives a damn. I did not care at all. I wasn't even curious. And then part two, and I went, okay, well, that confirms some suspicions I had. And then it got significantly better, but like, there was too much of an investment. If I was reading it not for the podcast, I probably would have ditched it around page, somewhere between page 100 and 150.
Yeah, which would have been funny, because that's before you get to the crazy stuff.
Right. It's just, it's a big investment for something that I ended up not particularly caring for in the long run. Yeah.
And I haven't read any of Gillian Flynn's other books, but I've heard her other books are basically the same. Like, all of her characters are despicable human beings.
The review I had was, if you like this book, you should definitely read more of her books.
Yeah.
Okay. I know not to.
So, you had a question.
Oh, yeah. What was my question? Oh, it was, when does someone finally catch Amy and her shenanigans? I don't care how detailed you are. If you lie about everything, sooner or later,
at some point.
Yeah, sooner or later, someone's going to call you on it.
I was listening to a podcast about this book, and I liked the theory that Amy eventually gets called out by her own kid, since she was raised by such a manipulator.
The only person who could possibly match her manipulative skills.
Yeah. So, I guess
we kind of just touched on our verdict, but yeah. Just in case it wasn't obvious, I didn't much care for it.
I liked it.
All right, I think this is the first time that you've liked something and I haven't.
Yeah, usually it's the other way around.
I think there's been one or two where I just hated it more than you did.
Like 50 Shades of Grey. As we keep bringing up.
Well, usually it'll be some author who's too dumb to include a woman character, and that upsets you. And I'm like, yeah, it was okay.
So what are we reading right now?
I am reading Idiot America by Charles Pierce, where he poses the question, in a nation where everybody can be an expert on anything thanks to information, how come people who are actually experts are now looked down upon?
Oh, fair enough. I wonder that a lot. Yeah. Listen to the fucking scientist. What is wrong with you?
Right.
Speaking of which, listen to the scientist.
Right.
I am reading Frauds, Myths, and Mysteries by Ken Fader, which Ben was reading a couple weeks ago, about scientists and why you should listen to them instead of the people who believe in, like, the occult and Atlantis and stuff.
Right, yeah. His book is about, specifically about archaeological so-called mysteries that are mostly
not
solved.
Mysteries, yeah.
And the scientific method. And I'm actually just going to throw a point of interest from that book out real quick. And I really love his explanation of the scientific method, and I don't want to give a detailed explanation, but his statement that science is not process of elimination. So if you come up with five ideas and you disprove four of them, that doesn't mean aliens is right.
Yes, I actually did love that point.
Yeah.
If you have five explanations and the fifth one is aliens and the first four are wrong, it's not aliens.
Yeah, not unless you find evidence for that point too.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, otherwise you'd go back to the drawing board.
So that was, I really liked that point. So anyway, if you want to comment on anything we've said, or if you have questions or any form of feedback, essentially, then you can leave a comment on our website, novelideaspodcast.com.
You can email us at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at novelideaspod.
Ben's been tweeting a fair amount lately, too, so our Twitter feed's like actually worth checking out.
I'm trying to, at the very least, tell you what I'm reading at a given moment and then throw out a thought on it every couple of chapters. So
yeah.
I'm hoping to average a tweet or so a day, so it's not just sitting there telling you when there's a new episode.
Yeah. Assuming you can get a little bit of wit.
Yeah.
Sterling wit.
Yeah. Of the Ben Roman variety. If that's something you need in your life.
Yeah, that's something I need in my life.
Because some of you can't get enough, I know.
Some of you might need it. I'll have a dueling Twitter feed on the same feed. Like, just arguing with each other. You can also find us on iTunes.
Yeah, we are on iTunes. Rate, review, comment, etc.
Etc.
So, let's see. Next week,
yes,
we will be doing The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald.
In honor of the Baz Luhrmann version of the movie coming out this Friday, I think.
A movie I will probably go see, even though my expectations for it are fairly low.
Yeah, me too. I'm like, ooh, sexy adaptation of Gatsby.
From the trailer, I think it's going to look very interesting.
I did read an interview with Baz Luhrmann, the director, and he said the reason they use hip-hop, they use just kind of like a mix of hip-hop and jazz in the movie, and he said that if they used jazz, it would just kind of come across as like old-timey, but he wanted to demonstrate that the music they were listening to at the time was really like edgy,
right?
And the party music, and so he just took modern-day edgy party music because he thought that fit. It would get across to a modern audience better.
Right.
Well, I thought it was a pretty interesting idea. At least you're not just putting Jay-Z in there for, like, shit.
Right, right. And, you know, it's not period accuracy necessarily in a movie that I'm looking for, depending on the movie. But, yeah, like I said, I'll probably see it, and we'll, I don't know, if I see it before the podcast, we can compare, but
maybe.
Probably won't be that on top of
maybe
that.
Maybe we can do a movie review or something.
Yeah. Like a brief one like we did for Hunger Games or something. Anyhow, I think that's going to do it. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Timing was off every time I tried. All circumstances have fallen.